Over 9,000.
Keep it 100.
Guys, that's the only anime reference I know.
Why did I think doing podcasting with Rice Krispies in your mouth really doesn't work?
I think that's true. Jim just brought a live example of his cereal to the show, though.
That sounds strange. So when you say doing theology on the internet, what does that mean? Is that the mere mention of supralapsarianism. There we go. Supralapsarianism. You can't even mention that.
That should have been a bit. Okay. I didn't think of an intro for my intro. Hold on.
Just swing it. That's what I do.
I know. So Jim, you have subjected me repeatedly to a game that I invented and asked you subject.
Which is this podcast, isn't it?
Asked you to subject me to once, just once. Yes. And I don't mind that it's an ongoing bit, but you mentioned at one point that you feel bad because it's kind of a bit where I have to be, on the spot on my toes,
standing
on my tippy toes on top of a dog named Spot, trying to rapid fire, come up with responses to your inquisitions, which don't happen in Spanish. Cause I would never expect those.
No. Biblioteca, papist or not.
And that's the game, papist or not. And so a couple weeks ago, you suggested, last time we did this, you suggested that we play a game called Baptist or not, which I think technically both of us are qualified to play. Well, I guess, I mean, you're no more qualified to play Baptist or not than I am. No, what am I trying to say? I'm no more qualified to play papist or not than you are Baptist or not. Like, I was never a Catholic.
But yet we play. Right. And I was never a Baptist.
What?
What?
I really need to do a supercut of all the non-Baptist-y things you say. Anyway, I want to explain, because you're going to be in the hot seat, as our silver-haired, silver-shirted, silver-tied man would, friend would say, Regis Philbin. Yep. You're going to be in the hot seat. You have no lifelines.
My Regis Philbin impression is so awful. Hello, I'm Regis Philbin. So bad. Anyways, by the way, I made David laugh. By the way, us doing this today is more about my excitement rather than my failure, because I want to play too.
Ah, well, that's good.
That's what it is. So it's more of a positive motivation than a negative one, if that makes sense.
So I just want to say, in terms of the rules, because listeners may not have heard me play papist or not, and they may be really confused. The rules here are, I'm going to give Jim a list of five things. I can come up with a sixth if he really likes it, but I have five things here. And Jim is going to tell me if they are papist or, sorry, if they are Baptist or not. Did you ever notice that there's only one letter difference between Baptist and papist?
Hey, that is interesting.
That is the strongest argument I have for paedobaptism. I just convinced someone.
The strongest someone out there in our listener sphere. Went, oh, right. Ben Robin just threw away everything he knew. He's taken his PhD application and he has thrown it into the fire.
Oh man. So the rules here though are there are no rules. You need to come up with an interpretive grid by which you will judge each of these items, but it can change from question to question. I'm basing the rules off of my past behavior.
Man, now I don't want to play.
And you will be graded. You won't be graded. But if you were graded, the grade wouldn't matter. And it would be based off of how funny it is.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right, are you ready?
I'm sure I will score well, because I have always been good at the funny. Haven't I? No, I haven't.
Are you ready, Jim?
Yeah, let me take a swig of beer.
Jim's going to be burping the whole episode. Neither of us have, what are you drinking there anyway, Jim? Whoa!
When I
say I'm expecting sip, you to say, don't worry, wasn't beer. That was just my own urine.
I'm conducting an experiment, David.
I think Jim just chugged what looked to be about seven ounces of beer.
I'm drinking a Blue Moon Belgian White Ale.
Oh, that's why you chugged it.
I just kind of started drinking and decided in my mind that I should probably drink the whole thing for what they call, as you would say, entertainment value.
I have dry white boxed wine here.
Oh, David,
or boxed wine.
This is your decisions in life always fascinate me.
Why?
They fascinate me. You drink Grey Goose vodka straight.
Right. Straight. Neat. Yeah.
And you're drinking a dry spring wine from the box.
It's
just great.
We like to buy box wine because it lasts longer. Like once you open a bottle of wine, you're not supposed to keep it around for a month. And with box wine, you can just drink it as slow as you want, which really doesn't matter in quarantine, but whatever.
Yeah. We are drinking at holiday levels. That's what they say, David.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Americans in general are drinking at holiday levels because of this quarantine that we find ourselves in. Anyways, back to the game. Baptist
Quentin Quarantino.
Let's start the music. Let's rock and roll.
All right, here we go. Are you ready to play? Who, Baptist or nah? That was my Regis Philbin. It wasn't good.
Baptist, Baptist or nah?
All right.
It's so bad. No, I've done this. Baptist. Hey, I'm Regis Philbin. Who wants to be a millionaire? Hello. Boy, I can't do it. I can't do it.
He has a scratchiness to his voice. I wouldn't even attempt
it. Hello. I'm Regis Philbin. I have hair. I can't do it. Anyway, keep going.
All right, Baptist or nah, Jim? The stone David used to kill Goliath of Gath.
Okay. it was one of three stones. No, was it three, right?
Yes, one of three. It was five stones, by the way.
It was five stones? Okay.
That's what I thought, but yeah.
Boy, this game is harder than I thought it was going to be. I thought this was going to be easy. David threw the thing or slung the stone at Goliath. And we are David, and Goliath is our problems. And I would
good exegesis. I like it.
I would say that is a very Baptist thing to think. Most Baptists are really good at eisegesis, so that is Baptist. That's my final
answer. All right. Do you want to know if I agree with you or not? You never
because
participated.
David, Goliath is our problem, and we just slew it. That's Baptist.
Okay.
Boom. Go. That's pretty reasonable to me, you know.
Do you want interaction? Because I agree, but for different reasons.
I've always interacted with you.
My reason is that he took them from a brook, as the KJV says. They were immersed in water, and therefore they were Baptist.
Okay, that's great. Maybe I should consult the text next time.
That's
good reasoning. That is good reasoning.
Well, that's the only one that there's a text for. Well, sort of. Next one, Jim. Baptist or nah? TikTok dances.
Okay. TikTok dances better. Some say TikTok is better than vines.
Mm-hmm.
But I like vines, and those are the old.
You mean the concordance or the videos?
The concordance? Oh, no. Good point, though. No, I'm out of line of thought here. You have to let me go with this.
I'm sorry.
I'm thinking nah.
Okay.
TikTok dances are nah because no. No, they're Baptist because vines started off as the original, and those were Presbyterian, and TikTok is Baptist,
right?
And so they're Baptist. Yep, they're Baptist.
That's okay. What I decided. Okay. All right.
Vines were Presbyterian and correct, and then TikTok is a ripoff of the Baptist or of the Presbyterian. So I'm going to say TikTok dances are Baptist.
All right. I think I agree with you.
Okay, good.
I'll save my reasoning because it would just offend you. Anyway, next up, I have cargo shorts, Jim. Cargo shorts Baptist or nah?
And cargo shorts, if it may please the court, sidebar, Your Honor. Not a sidebar. Cargo shorts are the shorts that have pockets.
Extra pockets, like the ones that are not slanted. And they kind of rest like slightly above your knee or like a lot above your knee, depending on how short they are.
Okay. Cargo shorts are worn by me all the time.
Except now,
because I'm wearing my pants that I've been wearing for a couple weeks. And I am a Baptist.
Right.
But I drink tons of alcohol.
Right.
So I'm not Baptist.
You're not a good Baptist.
So I can't, that has to be nah. That can't be Baptist because the association is incorrect with me and I'm no longer a Baptist. So
I'm glad I didn't ask.
Because of the alcohol that I drink. That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. So
it's nothing about the cargo shorts. It's more about me. My answer depends more on me than the inherent nature of the cargo shorts.
Jim, next time you have three drinks, give me a call and we'll discuss paedo baptism. Okay.
Jim is surprisingly amenable to it right now. Honey, bring me the sacred writ. I have a few things to share with Jim.
I neither agree nor disagree with you, Jim. I'm glad I didn't gasp this one. Okay. Next up, I have the Westminster Standards. Baptist or not?
Westminster Standards, not as good as the sequel, the 1689 London Baptist Confession, second, as you would say.
I would say that.
So I'm going to say nah, because it's not Baptist enough.
Not Baptist enough. That's an interesting way to go with it.
Yeah, mostly Baptist.
Right.
Because the 1689 people just, took most of the words and didn't change it.
Right.
And just changed a few of the words to make it their own.
I should have put plagiarism in here, Baptist or not.
Clearly. Yes. It's very clearly.
All right. Well, last up here we have. Oh, go ahead.
I shouldn't have slammed that beer. I'm a little weird right now. Keep going.
Last up we have mom jeans, Baptist or not.
Yeah.
Before you start on this, can I tell you a secret? I don't know what they are.
You do. Well, no. You may not.
Yeah, I don't.
Because when they were last popular, you were but a wee babe.
Right.
You were but a wee babe in the faith. Those were popular around the 90s, I believe.
It doesn't really.
And for some reason, they have become popular again.
Right. That's how fashion works, Jim.
Yes. Yes. I'm aware. Soon enough.
Not wearing pants will be in style again.
Inside out sweatshirts under t-shirts will be popular again. That's what I used to wear all the time in middle school. I would wear Metallica t-shirts with sweatshirts underneath.
Anyway, Jim, you're stolen and I'm helping you, but I need you to know mom jeans, Baptist or not.
Mom jeans, Baptist or not. I don't like mom jeans, but I can't say that because I'm a guy and I can't dictate to anybody else any of their fashion statements. A mom jean just does whatever it wants and has no authority over it to dictate whether it should be worn or not, which is basically Baptist congregationalism. That's basically Baptist polity.
Don't worry, Ben. It's coming in follow-up.
So I'm going to say that mom jeans are Baptist because they're reckless. They have reckless love. They're reckless.
I should have asked if reckless love was Baptist or not.
That's a good point. With the authority over them, they disregard it. They disregard the authority over them, and they're worn with absolute rebellion. So that is Baptist.
All right. Well,
have any of mine been nah?
Nah was. The Westminster Standards were nah. Okay. And cargo shirts were nah.
Right.
Literally the last one you just did.
Thank you. I think I did a good job.
I do. I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. This is fun. The first one, you get the first one out of the way and the second one gets easier. So next time we play this, maybe we could do a couple more. I think I'm feeling good. I think
five is a good number. I mean, we're 10 minutes at least into this,
We got to be careful today.
Oh, I know.
We will be attempting the main topic today for, I believe, the third time?
This is the third time, yes.
So we got to be swift. We have to be Jonathan Swift, as they say. So with that said, let's go ahead and get started with our show, huh?
True.
You will never answer that question in a good way.
It was a swift bullion, Jim.
Ever. Okay. All right. Let's start the show.
The podcast you are about to hear contains the histrionic and problematic conversations of a stodgy Presbyterian and a casserole-loving Baptist. Their interactions are volatile at times and unpleasant most of the time. In many nations, this is considered a mild form of torture. We strongly advise you to stop this nonsense and go do something useful with your life. Otherwise, if you insist on listening to this mess, welcome to the lightest form of flogging.
Thank you, Deep Voice Man. I also welcome you to the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast, episode 93. I am your host, Jim, and I am here to declare that as for me and my house, we will serve tacos. And sitting across the country from me at a contractually negotiated 804 miles is my co-host David, who I can safely say is at best only half the podcast host I am. And that, my friends, is but the first of many weight jokes we'll hear today. Now then, that was a weight joke. That wasn't what you thought it was. Anyways, hey, Sean,
I assumed you were talking about by volume, unless you're talking about decibels.
Right, right. You are louder than me in your fashion choices. Hey, we have a show to get to. David, we have to be swift. We have to be on point. We have to be focused.
Yep.
Because we have not been doing that lately.
Protocol oriented. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. I think it's been fun that we were, you know, free enough to go through our follow-up section with enough care and volume of words.
Do you want to keep talking about follow-up before we do follow-up, or do you just want to
completely missing our main topic?
Right.
Twice now. So today is our third attempt to do directionlessness
using minutes.
And I think we're going to be very successful. So, but we have a few housekeeping things to get through before we get to follow-ups.
Of course we do. Yep. David? Yep. We got to keep the house.
Okay. So we issued a call, I believe on our Slack channel, for more voicemails.
Well, it wasn't a call.
What's a call? Well, what do you mean? Not a call. What do you mean?
I wouldn't use a phone.
True. We issued an edict, a request, as you would say.
A decree went out.
Voicemails. And we got a voicemail. So I'm pretty excited. You know, it's been
a point. We got a voicemail and a text. And I should point out that if you text us, you just need to let us know, because I don't get notifications for those.
What's with you, by the way? What, I mean, like
it's not my phone number. What do you want from me?
I wanted to ask you this, and I don't think I got to it clear enough on Slack, but why would we discourage people from sending in texts to us? Because that's what you were doing. When you were like, oh, come on, guys. I don't know. This is my David McCookie.
Because I don't feel like checking every now and again.
But does it go to the same place that you would find a voicemail at?
Yes.
So you have to physically check, right?
I have to physically check, but not for voicemails. I get emails about voicemails, and it's just the way that Google Voice works.
So you don't get any notification whatsoever for any text.
Exactly. Correct? Once living in Spokane and somebody sent me a text on the wrong number because it was a Google Voice number that I no longer use. And he's like, hey, we're going to be in Spokane next week. And I got it 6 months later.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, there are some challenges. I see that.
Yes.
I get that. I understand.
I am challenged, Jim.
You are challenged, but I don't want to discourage our listeners from sending in text to us to the vlogging phone line, the vlogging line. So I want folks to realize that yes, and apart from voicemails, you can also send in text to the vlogging show. 707-998-8547. Send a text to that number and we will read it on air. We will answer it on air. We want to make it easier for the folks to come to us. Okay, David? So we don't want to discourage them.
Right.
We have to put in a little bit more work.
So if we don't want to discourage them, why do we do this show?
Well, good point. Let's go ahead and play our voicemail. Go ahead.
Beep, beep.
Hello. This is Best Buy calling to remind you about your in-home appointment scheduled for
May 23rd, 2020.
With an estimated arrival time between
7 o'clock a.m.
and
1 o'clock p.m.
local time at
437 Norwich Street.
Please know that our teams have new safety measures to protect both you and our employees, including protective gear, social distancing minimums, and cleaning supplies and processes. For more information about our safety practices for in-home appointments, visit www.bestbuy.com/safehomevisit. If anyone in your home is ill or in quarantine, please reschedule your appointment for a later date or contact us to change your order to a doorstep delivery. You can reach our customer service representatives from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Central Time, 7 days a week at 1-888-BESTBUY. Again, that number is 1-888-237-8289. Please visit bestbuy.com/appointment for important appointment updates. Again, that's bestbuy.com/appointment. We thank you for your business, and we look forward to seeing you at your appointment on
May 23rd, 2020.
So, David, after all this time, all this promotion, trying to get people to call into our voicemail line, all of that work, that anticipation, okay? And we got a voicemail from someone who used our phone line to register for a Best Buy curbside pickup, it sounds like.
Yep.
Do I have that right? I mean,
either that or they just entered the number wrong. I don't really know.
Okay. So
curbside pickup, I think, is the only way you can buy from Best Buy right now.
Yeah, currently it is. So either one of our listeners played a joke on us, was being funny.
Right.
Or someone seriously just accidentally used our phone line to register a Best Buy curbside.
Well, pickup. And honestly, well, somebody funny enough to think of this could not possibly listen to our show.
True, true. We have some funny listeners. My voice just went goofy there. We have some funny listeners, I would say. Well,
of course we would say that.
Quite anticlimactic, I must say.
Right.
So with that disappointment, let's go on to some more disappointment. We have a few texts to read. So David,
that is true.
The first one, I believe it is addressed to you.
Did I send this to you in Slack? Cause I don't really feel like this is the problem is I have like five Google accounts and I don't feel like signing into them all the time. All right. Yeah. You sent it to me. Okay. Here we go.
So an unnamed listener.
All right. Upside down question mark. David, comma, does oatmeal qualify as sous?
Which he probably meant soup.
He or she.
He or she. Right, right. We don't want to discriminate here. We are
not. Sorry. Yeah, we're not going to do the whole. We're going to be respectful of pronouns. It probably meant soup.
They said.
And so I guess that one's for me.
Yeah, that one's for you. Here, let me get my calculator up. Yep, it's for you.
Jim, do you want to take a stab at it first?
Boy. There can be soupy oatmeal and then there could be like really chunky. My mom used to make for me a lumpy oatmeal.
Right.
So it would lump together really well. Mm-hmm. And so it was like almost like a solid. You could like pick it up and like throw an oatmeal ball at your brother if you wanted to.
Right.
And what she would do is she would put it in a bowl and pour milk into it and put some sugar on. Well, put some sugar on the oatmeal first and then pour some milk in it. And you would just eat out of that.
Right.
And that's what my experience was with oatmeal for most of my life. And then only right. like the past 10, 15 years have I been eating oatmeal as everybody else does. So to me, in my childhood, oatmeal, yes, was soup because it was in a sea of milk. So it was soupy. Now, I think it's more. It's more of a hardened broth. I just successfully title. Made myself laugh. I've done that in a while. Oh, I'm like Dane Cook. I'm laughing at my own jokes. How pathetic.
I just need to point out that was an excellent title. I think I'm probably going to use it because something I do while I'm podcasting and now even in real life is I think about like, what's a weird way to say this? And then I say it in two or three words and then it ends up being a title. Like this is just a thing that, but there's a sub process in the back of my mind. I am multi-threaded. Well, so I am going to answer this question in the form of a parable.
Hardened broth. Yes, go ahead.
Sarah, one night. No, wait, parables don't have names. A woman one night whose husband does not like soup.
Okay.
Made soup for dinner, but her husband was late coming home from work. She knows that her husband does not like soup. And so she made the soup, ate it as soup herself, and then poured her husband a bowl of soup, but strained out all of the broth so that it was essentially just moist chicken, moist barley, moist carrots. And moist.
That's a Saturday night right there.
Right. So sorry, she did this. Her husband returned home and he had no idea that what he was eating had been soup. But the question is, eating moist chicken, moist barley, moist corn, and moist whatever, is that soup?
No.
It's served on a plate. It cannot be soup.
On a plate. It was soup.
See, it bothers us. Yeah. On a sort of visceral level to hear, this is my TED talk, by the way, to hear that something can be soup and then not be soup anymore. Like there's this thing that kind of bugs you where it's
nature,
like
the fluid right, nature, the, that disturbing.
You could say that in multiple ways because that is the thing about soup. The thing that makes soup is its fluid nature.
Okay. Check. Yeah, that is true. We have to keep the main thing, the main thing. We cannot forget.
You have to keep the main thing, the main thing. Rah!
What is
that? That's my CJ Mahaney impression.
That does sound like, no, in order to do a proper CJ Mahaney impression, you have to shout just like you did and then cry for 5 minutes in the pulpit. Then you have done a CJ Mahaney impression.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that we all recognize that at a certain point, soup stops being soup. When you start taking the liquid out, it becomes a collection of soggy solids. And so that's the thing with oatmeal is oatmeal could be soup. If you grew up eating the oatmeal that comes in the little packets where you pour milk and maybe some hot water and you pour out your oatmeal into it and then just kind of mix it. And what you end up with is like islands surrounded by milky liquid, then that's soup. Yeah. But my wife likes to make oatmeal from scratch or by hand, as you would say. And it's really just a mosh of, what did you say it was? Hardened broth.
Hardened broth.
And that's not soup. That's just mush. I mean, you have to eat it in a bowl, admittedly. I mean, yeah. I guess you really could eat it on a plate. But anyway, for me, the distinguishing factor is, do you have solids surrounded by bodies of liquid?
You know what? You know what you have successfully done in my life, David? You have made me question everything having to do with soup. So when I am posed with a question like this, which should be an easy question to answer, I have overthunk it to the max degree because of you. But, so, and you've done this on purpose so that you can do what you just did, which is just, you know, say an obvious thing about soup. And everyone else is just like, you know, man, he's right. David is right. And then you will follow into paedobaptism and then everything will be fine.
So anyway, baptize your children. Again, solid mass, body of liquid. Actually, you can sprinkle. It's
fine.
Thank
you everyone for coming to my TED Talk.
That's actually an argument against... Jim just walked away. That's actually a good argument against immersion, because when you do immersion, you end up with Christian soup.
True. For the Christian soul.
It's also why I don't go swimming. We have another question here, Jim.
Unfortunately for us and for our listening audience, this next one's for Bill. But because of social distancing relocation and I believe a court order, Bill is no longer in studio with us. So we will have to fire up the in-studio phone and give Bill a call. Hey, David, could you bring up a quick call to Bill?
Stand by.
So while we are standing by, who is that? I'm broadcasting at the moment. Who is there? It's me, Bill. What? How did you get in here? David called me and told me to come. But how is that even?
I did what you asked, Jim.
Okay. Bill, someone texted into our flogging line and asked this question. Quote, I would also like to know what cheese Bill H. pairs with his nitrine. End quote. What say you, Bill?
Well, I believe this question is best answered by my wife, but as she is not here, we may have to give her a call. Hey, David, can you rig up that call for us?
Stand by.
All right. While we are waiting for that call to go through, okay, who is that now?
David called and told me I was needed.
What is going on, David? How are you able to do that?
How is anyone able to do anything?
Oh, never mind. Honestly, I don't even want to know. Okay. A question from our text line is as follows. I would also like to know what cheese Bill H. pairs with his nitrine. And Bill wants you to answer because you're the one who likes nitrine. What say you?
White cheddar cheese popcorn. Can I go now?
We kind of need a little bit more entertainment value out of you. This is a bit, you realize.
But you ran into writer's block and can't think of anything else funny to write, so I kind of want to go back home.
She has a point, Jim. You can't seem to write any decent bits anymore. All you do is eat entire bags of chips and self-destruct on your couch.
Really? You're leaving the bit that I'm writing because I ran out of lines for you?
Call us back when you have good material. Until then, go fly a kite.
They have a good point, Jim. You can't seem to write a good skit anymore.
Wow. So it has come to this. Okay. Well, that was that. And we're going to move on from that. And say this. Hey, folks, if you too want to participate in the nuttiness that is the lightest form of flogging phone line, you can call, leave a voicemail, or leave a text. Ask a question, leave a concern, leave a praise, a high praise for David or I. And you can do that by calling 707-998-8547 or 707-992-LIP, leave a voicemail, or leave a text. And we, David and I, will be ready to believe you. Now then, also, one more thing to mention. Our Facebook page, David, is, as the kids say, blowing up. Have you seen that?
Yes. Been following them? Somebody's been sharing a meme.
Isn't that great?
A lot. People have been sharing a particular meme a lot.
Yeah, we have a couple of the memes that have gone viral.
Yep.
As they say.
Well, viral by our standards.
Viral.
Actually, can we not use that terminology? It's kind of touchy right now.
You're right.
It's gone bacterial.
Yeah, and it's a big success thanks to you folks. So if you have not yet gone to the Lettuce Form of Flogging Facebook page and liked that page, you're a selfish jerk. Now go there right now. Do that very thing. Like the page. And if you see anything funny that you like, please share it on your page so that we can grow this little thing we like to call the Lettuce Form of Flogging Podcast.
Now, you know, Jim, I'm going to go do that. I'm going to do exactly what you said. And if I should return,
finally,
think better of me.
Think better of me, Father.
That will depend on the manner of your return.
By the way, I mean, one of the funniest memes I ever saw was the one I posted about Denethor, Lord Denethor, posing as Donald Trump, saying that the death of the death of Boromir over Faramir was the worst trade deal ever in the history of trade deals, possibly ever. That was classic. One of the better memes I've seen in my life. Okay, we have so much to get to. We have about 30 minutes of show left, and we have to start our... Oh, man. I don't know how we're going to do this. I seriously don't know how we're going to... We're going to have to talk incredibly fast for follow-up.
Right, right.
Let's try to finish our follow-up segment.
Most of these are pretty short.
Okay, good. Go ahead. You start.
Let's see. First up is Jim said that Mitch Hedberg has not been alive for an incredibly long time. I misinterpreted that as Jim saying that Mitch Hedberg has not been dead or has been dead for an incredibly long time. What you meant was that Mitch Hedberg did not live an incredibly long time, that he died at 30.
I think what I said was valid. Just
I'm not saying, and I was about to say, I misunderstood. I'm pretty sure that's on me. I think other people might have made that mistake. Wait a minute. Everybody.
Why can't you just say that? Why can't you just say, Jim, what you said was fine. I just misinterpreted. No, you said what you should have said. You can't help yourself, can you?
It's true.
Come on. Just.
I demand precision from myself and everyone around me.
All right. As long as you demand it from yourself.
Next up is I don't understand congregationalism. I was told this by Ben Robin. And he says he's happy to explain it to me, and I probably will take him up on that sometime. But yeah, probably disregard some of the things I've said about congregationalism and read. Actually, Ben, you should go ahead and post in the Slack a good book on congregationalism for people who are interested in it.
I reached out to him recently because I want him on the show.
Right,
maybe
right.
We can talk about that. But maybe we can't talk about that because of something you're going to say to follow-up points from now.
Yeah, actually, the next one here is theology or not. I'm going to go ahead and do this because it's going to be relatively short and just say that I've had some discussions with my pastor about should lay people do theology and teach. And in general, not in everything, but in general, we are on the same page. So as I kind of sort through what I'm okay with doing publicly, because podcasts are public, we are going to be taking a little bit of a break from probably just a few weeks from theology topics, which kind of works out because we've been a little theology heavy lately and we kind of needed a palate cleanser anyway. Yeah. But I don't anticipate the show changing a lot, maybe just a little here and there. Like there are places where I feel like maybe I've stepped over a line and I just want to kind of build my own heuristic, my own grid, as you would say, Jim, of what is and is not a good idea for me to stay on the show. And so we're just going to take a couple of weeks and do less theology shows. And when we come back, probably the only difference will be maybe I'm a little more careful in how I speak, and not as one having authority, but as the scribes.
Okay. I have about 400 things I've been wanting to say to you in regards to this topic.
We've spoken
a little bit before the show, and with respect to time, we're not going to get into that per your request. And we're just going to go ahead and move on. And
yeah, we may actually do an episode about this change, but we'll see.
After the time of reflection that you requested. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll chat a little bit about it because I have some questions.
Right.
I have some concerns.
Right.
All unfounded, of course.
And right.
Baseless. Without right. any shred of truth in them. But nevertheless, that beer was a mistake. Nevertheless, David.
You're my only friend in the world.
Is that a reference I missed?
Oh, that's just what drunk people say in cartoons all the time. You're my only friend in the world.
What a random reference that gives me so much joy.
It's in like Looney Tunes. It's in Disney. It's everywhere.
This isn't going to be too hard for us.
Chris Wagstall will back me up.
Most of our... Finally, you get to make that reference. most of our show has been non-theology anyway. This shouldn't be too hard for you and me to resist talking about it for the next 3 weeks. So I'm not worried about that at all. I'm not worried about that at all. What I am worried about is the effect the Blue Moon beer is having on my psyche right now.
Right.
So moving on.
Next up is gluten, wheat, and whiskey. So I was talking with my pastor again, as I do now. And
you talk to that guy a lot, don't you?
Well, not a lot, but we had some conversations this week, which I already talked about. Anyway, one of the things was, whiskey and how he is, like legit gluten intolerant, legit gluten intolerant. And he can't drink scotch because sometimes it upsets his tummy, as you would say. Yeah. And I was wondering if you have any recommendations for whiskeys to try that would bypass that particular condition. I was surprised that it would have any effect.
I may have to sideline this until next week because I have...
That's totally fine.
Not being gluten intolerant, I have not really looked at this much. I have been able to enjoy most whiskeys.
Right.
Without having that effect. Mm-hmm. It has other effects, but not that one. So I'm not as familiar. I mean, so maybe I'll cover that more in detail next week, because it is a good point to cover, as it's very applicable or very practical, as you would say.
Right.
I will preface that by saying there is a member of our whiskey club, Spokane Whiskey Club, that has a gluten intolerance. Actually, the guy I talked about last week, Ben.
Oh, is that why you passed out?
Yeah. And he cannot enjoy too much, I believe, wheat whiskey. The primary grain derived from or distilled from wheat.
Right.
Because of his gluten intolerance. So that's about the only whiskey I know that you should stay away from. I haven't heard of barley whiskeys or scotch whiskeys giving people too many problems, but apparently it gives your pastor a problem. So let me look into that, David, and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Because he's a Presbyterian, and so he should be able to enjoy some glass of scotch sometimes.
Yeah. We need to find this guy some options.
Anyway, next up, actually, do you have where David Dunn lives? Can you go ahead and dive into that? Because it's been me for a while now.
Fun little follow-up point. You shared with me a Slack, private message in our Slack, a drone video from your Instagram. That shows me where you live. And actually, I should ask, is this okay to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, it's on my Instagram. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. And I've always wondered where you live, because you have said many times that you live in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, that's subjective. I mean, what is that?
Spokane is technically the middle of nowhere, you know?
It could be. Yeah, it could be. But you have a drone.
I do.
And I know this. Yep. And you utilize this drone device to display where in the middle of nowhere you exactly are. That drone flew a really far ways away. And you truly do live in the middle of nowhere, David.
I was
surprised. I mean, as I was watching that video, I mean, this is seriously what I looked like. I was like, I can see off in the distance some mountains.
Yep,
and like you live in a house like in the middle of like a very large field. You just live in a field somewhere in Colorado. I mean, you really are isolated. That's pretty fun. So
I should say that by the end of the footage, the drone is technically over a housing development that has maybe 30 or so houses. Like there is a small development that does exist, but if you keep going that way, you'll find nothing.
I was about ready for you to say the drone kept going and it was in like Oklahoma and I still couldn't find any houses, you know?
No. I framed the shot very strategically because I just wanted to communicate the social distancing of it all.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was very powerful, David, as they say.
Thank you.
Maybe you could share that on our show notes so the folks can kind of see.
Absolutely, Jim. I can do that.
Where our co-host David McCookie lives. So that's all I got.
I have one more here.
Okay.
All right. So did you hear what Trump said?
I try not to listen too much to the man, to be quite honest. All due respect to our fine listeners who support Trump.
I am very interested to get your thoughts on this. I'm going to read you a quote. There may be, I'm not sure how, there's a point where the quote breaks And I'm not sure if it's like all contiguous, but I'm going to read it as contiguous. You know what contiguous is, right?
No, I don't know what contiguous. I know what continuous means, but continuous.
Continuous. Like we'll go with continuous here.
Contagion. Is it like continually infects people with the disease? Is that what it means? Okay, good, good. I'm glad it means
contiguous that. Is like continuous, meaning without any pauses, breaks, gaps.
You are a guy that does that. You like to like look at thesauruses and find words that slightly mean similar things and use those just to screw with people. That's what you do.
I don't look at thesaurus. I do look like, at thesauruses when I'm trying to rhyme.
Like the first time you used the word conflate to me, like I was almost mad at you because I'm like, I know what you're doing. You're saying you just want to say confuse.
I learned contiguous. Don't. No, conflate. So you can confuse things.
I know there's a difference, but like, I mean, is the difference that important? I don't know. I'm not enough
to use a different word.
Yes, I know, David, but I'm just saying, I think your motive was suspect at the time. I don't believe that anymore.
Here's the quote.
Okay.
This is in regard. Well, actually I'll just read. Yeah, here we go. Some governors have deemed liquor stores and abortion clinics as essential, but have left out churches and other houses of worship. It doesn't seem right, Trump said during impromptu remarks to reporters. So I'm correcting this injustice and calling houses of worship essential. I call upon our governors to allow our churches and places of worship to open right now. The governors need to do the right thing and allow these very important, essential places of faith to open right now for this weekend. If they don't do it, I will override the governors. In America, we need more prayer, not less. My head exploded when I read that.
I'm certain that some churches appreciate El Presidente's support. I would ask a qualifying question. Are churches truly, are we forbidden from meeting in church buildings? I would like to know that because I'm not actually quite sure if that's the case in Washington State. Yes, that is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That is the case.
Well, you can meet in a group of like two.
You can. Yeah. Well, our state extended to five now, so we can meet in groups of five.
I mean, your county, right?
Yeah, but you has your church been able to meet at the church building, or has it been digital services?
We've been meeting at the church building as people, groups of 10.
Okay.
This week we're expecting that may change.
So he's probably talking about states where they have forbidden religious gatherings in those particular buildings.
I don't know. I mean, he's Donald Trump. Who can know?
I guess I don't know either. I don't think he cares as much about churches or prayer.
Oh no, I'm yeah. I mean,
I don't.
A man who doesn't believe he needs forgiveness cannot be a Christian. So
right. And I don't think he realizes that prayers can be just as efficacious outside of a church building than in it. No one is being prohibited from praying right now at the moment,
unless you're in school.
unless you're in school.
Hey-o.
How much, what a tragedy, you know, what a tragedy. Hi, my name's Karen. And I just wanted to tell you that I'm so upset that we cannot pray in school, but our wonderful president is helping us. No, I don't know what that was. That's the beer. Okay. It's the beer. What do you want from me? You know, I instead of just nitpicking everything that he said in that quote that I don't think of it as a very genuine thing. First off, but I don't really recognize his authority in helping me go back to church. I don't need President Trump's help in going back to church. I really don't. But I will say this. I don't really care much for Caesar telling me what to do when it comes to church anyway. I was mad enough with Caesar telling me I can't go to church. I equally have as much disdain for Caesar when he tells me to go to church. He has, my motivation to going to church or will never, ever come from the federal government ever in my life. So one, it just when you read that, I almost feel nothing, you know, like I just don't really care.
Right.
But on the other hand, I don't think that, I don't know how excited one should get if you're this a supporter of the guy with a quote like that. It's just pretty meaningless to me. Those are my impromptu thoughts. If I put more thought into it, maybe I can put together something better, but those are just my raw thoughts. There you go.
The interesting thing to me was about how he is asking governors to open these places and saying that he will override the governors if they do not. And this was a quote that came out on Friday, actually.
Could he actually do that?
That's kind of what everybody is freaking out about, because
he could legally do that.
Right. He doesn't really have the authority to do that. And it's also probably not wise to like open up California right now or New York, like, you know, like, I mean, depending on where you like New York City for sure. And that's why I've thought for some time now that it would be better if we could trust the authorities of individual counties and cities to leave the decisions up to them, primarily. But anyway,
yeah, as suspicious as I am of those officials, I would much rather it be in the hands of a local official rather than a state or federal.
Right. You know? Yeah. In general, I agree.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's the thing about state is like your state is completely insane. Not by Seattle standards. By Seattle standards, they're probably reacting relatively reasonably, but by Spokane's clear across the state standards, it's just complete insanity because you have
going a little nuts.
Like last week you had 4 cases in the hospital and you have a lot of hospitals and a lot of beds.
Right. That is true. But in the case of Washington State or Spokane County, we were approved a tad bit early for phase 2,
which is 5 people.
But I know 5 people, but it's
so cute.
Something. It's adorable, isn't it? Hi.
5 people happen like by accident.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, as soon as that was announced, the next 4 days, there were double digit coronavirus infections announced. So there was like, there's been like a mini outbreak here.
Well, and 11. Hold on.
Well, I mean, but for Spokane standards, all of a sudden out of nowhere, 4 days in a row, like 12, 13 people a day have been infected.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds like you might be hitting the peak, as you would say.
As infection goes, I mean, that small amount of people could infect so many more who can infect so many more. So it's just like,
it's almost like every member ministry.
Sure. Yeah. I was just thinking of that.
Anyway, I'm really excited to see what happens because this is actual pressure from the federal government to, I was going to say from the Fed, but that sounds weird. From the federal government to the states to start opening churches. And I'm really interested to see, I mean, we were supposed to hear early this week, like today or yesterday, what our governor Polis, wants to do about opening churches specifically. And this announcement came out on Friday. So I wonder if that changed anything. I looked for news around 2 PM today to see if anything has changed and I didn't find anything, but it's possible something has happened since then. In any case, pray for your sessions for your elder boards, because they're having to make really difficult decisions right now. And, I would not want to be in their shoes.
Right.
Cause I have really narrow feet.
Sure. You just slip right out of them. we need to trudge on. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick musical break and we're going to try. We don't have much time, David, but we're going to try to get through our main topic. I'm very excited. This is our third attempt and we're going to make it today. So we're going to take a quick musical break. We'll be right back.
Oh, Jim, I try like so many times before. That's Casting Crowns. I'll turn the door.
You're right. That's pretty good. You know, the mark of a good vocalist is the ability to effortlessly slide into a falsetto and go right back into a controlled voice.
That's it's control, hard.
That's power. That's awesome. You're a good vocalist.
Thanks, Jim. You all too. Right. You too. That'll come in handy for our musical that I'm teasing right now.
Please stand by for a word from our sponsor.
Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot.
Hi, I'm Bill Hasinger, owner and operator of Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot. We offer the finest selection of new and used pallets for your church stage decor. Come on in, and our salespeople will match your stage decoration needs with the perfect wood pallet stack that looks about as dumb as it can get. But boy, howdy, will people really feel the ambiance.
Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot.
Here's a customer testimonial to tell you more. Hi, I'm Pastor Jim. You know, 10 years ago, I came up with an idea to stack wooden pallets on my church stage to increase attendance. I was laughed at and promptly fired. I tried again a few years later. The laughter continued, and I was fired again. But the third time was a charm. I had them stacked 10 high, I have a job, and no one's laughing now, as far as I can tell. Thanks, Jim. You want a clean pine look? A dirty oak look? Perhaps an array of colors will suit your fancy. I don't know and I don't care, as long as you buy. And this week we are offering for a limited time our new trade-in policy. Perhaps your arrayed pallets aren't gunning anybody's engine anymore. People aren't even looking at the stage, because it's as ugly as a handful of Florida dirt. Well, bring those on in for probably zero trade-in value, and we will sell you a new set of overpriced pallets. I tell you what, friend, it's just a great deal.
Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot!
Come visit us at one of 9 locations in the Pacific Northwest, because that's where all the hipsters go to church. You'll be glad you did. I sure will.
Bill Hasinger's Pallet Depot is a proud sponsor of the Lightest Form of Flogging podcast. Thank you.
Okay, we're back in it. We're back in the show. So I'm going to give us about a half an hour to talk about this.
That seems fair.
So it's gonna get really close to my small group time, but we've gone closer before and I'm done just fine. So a half an hour is, I think, is a good amount of time to talk about this topic. This is kind of a David-inspired topic, so I'm going to go ahead and turn the reins over to you. Don't worry, we're not in the same saddle. So this is a rein. These are reins from a different horse.
We could horse. Be in a horse-drawn carriage. That's what that actually, yeah. Turn the reins over means. Great. Like
yeah.
Here.
Yeah, we're in a wagon.
Right.
We're both sitting in the thing.
It's a wide wagon with a dividing wall.
Yeah, because of, you know, it's a plexiglass dividing wall because of coronavirus. I don't want to get infected.
And I'm wearing a mask.
I'm going to turn this over to you.
This is one of those topics. So we do psychology topics, and this is some of my favorites. And this is one of those topics. I like this. But frequently when we do this, we get feedback, reasonably so, from listeners who say, you know, you're not the first person to think about this. So Sigmund Freud or whoever labeled this something better. And
do we ever say that this is unique to us? That's what I've always wondered. When people say that, I don't think you and I ever say.
Oh, but we don't say that it's not.
We don't say that it's not. So they need that help.
And that's the thing is, I frequently act like it's unique to me because I'm the one who's thought about it. And what I mean by that is I haven't read these guys. Like I'm just, and so what I want to say about this is one of those topics where I suspect there's actually a lot of people, especially in Christian circles. Like I know Doug Wilson has written a book on this. I don't know. I'm not suggesting that you read it. I can't remember what it's called anyway. And you don't even know what the topic is now. So, but I suspect there are lots of people who've done really good work on this and I haven't really read any of them. Although I did read part of Doug Wilson's book.
Of course they have. I mean, this is essentially a subtopic of vocation.
Yes.
Anyone who's written a book on vocation will touch on this topic. And this is a topic that every male in their 30s thinks about. So there is no mistaking this being unique to us or you. But yeah, I mean, this is a topic that everyone is close to their heart, especially males in their 30s.
So with that in mind, I have been realizing, I guess, lately how common it is. Like I always knew this was a thing. I mean, Mark Driscoll talks about it sort of, although Driscoll talks about the 20-year-old who lives in his mom's basement and hasn't taken responsibility for his life. I'm talking about something slightly different here. I've been realizing how common it is to meet a guy in his 30s who's working a relatively dead-end job that he doesn't like. And I don't mean job like bag boy or burger flipper. Like it's usually something that, you know, if you stretch financially a little bit, have a tight budget, it can support a family. So maybe this is like the guy who delivers mail in a relatively large corporate office to individual desks. Like you make enough to get by, but it's not really a job that it's easy to find joy in. It's not a job that you really do for any reason other than it pays the bills. And I suspect that most people could do more and kind of want to do more. I think our theology of vocation has maybe is lacking, but that's not necessarily the angle that I want to tackle here. So I know a lot of guys who wrestle with the fact that they don't feel like their work has meaning. And then on the other hand, like they want to do more, but they don't feel like they have a skill set to do more. Like they don't feel like they've been adequately trained, or maybe they feel like they themselves as a person, the best that they can do is hand out mail because they don't have any unique marketable skills. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked about this before, mostly in regards to how you and I have struggled with this. But I thought maybe it would be good to, well, first we should just, I mean, in like three tweets or less, explain our story with this. And then, talk about maybe some of the reasons why it might be as widespread as it is. So why don't you go ahead and just kind of talk about your struggle with this and maybe where you're at with it now?
Okay. Well, my experience with this can be summed up fairly briefly. My three tweets or less response is thus. Throughout, I would say from age 25 to 35, and maybe a little bit later, I struggled in what I would call not dead-end jobs. Some were more dead-end than others. A job or two was probably pretty good. Like the job before this was pretty good. I wouldn't call that a dead-end job. I would say the beginning part of this 10-year period versus the latter half, the first 5 years was the hardest, where I was truly struggling with wanting to do something, but I couldn't. And instead I was doing this plan B. And if you let that simmer and you let the bitterness grow, that can be a pretty miserable time. And I felt like I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. I felt like I was just doing a job just to get by and just to pay the bills. And I felt directionless and that I wasn't fulfilling my purpose. And if you believe that, you can work yourself up to a pretty high level of misery. And I felt that going into my 30s, and that started to taper off in a previous position that I had, just because of conversations and realizations. I think I can safely say that I'm out of the woods, that because I've let go of a previous desire of mine. When that was finally gone, I started to recognize and feel better about all the things people have been telling me about the theology of vocation or an idea of vocation, and how that, if I was in a quote dead end job, that is a job that I could find somehow through some work and some determination and some time and perspective and counsel that can end up being a calling, a job that I was meant to do. And I could find some satisfaction in it. You can, you know, make lemons out of, no, you can make lemonade out of lemons. And I think I'm safely in that space now. So I am much, much more comfortable talking about vocation now than I was during that period. I believe I have grown and progressed and matured quite a bit, where I'm a pretty content guy when it comes to my career right now. And yeah, so I've come a long way. That was a lot longer than three tweets. It was like three really long tweets. But that's kind of a summary of where I'm in with that. And let me just say I'll save it for later. Keep going.
So my background with this is very much the not feeling like I have a valuable skill set or a marketable skill set, as you would say, for a very long time. I kind of stumbled into graphic design, and it is still something that I enjoy doing. And it kind of like what you were saying, it can be interesting how if you, I think it was G.K. Chesterton who once said there can be no such thing as an uninteresting thing or an uninteresting topic, only uninterested people. And so like graphic design is one of those things that I don't think I really had a natural affinity for necessarily. Like I was pretty bad at it when I started, worse than a lot of good designers, but I got better at it. And as I got better at it, I did find it interesting. And you know, now it's one of the things that I do. And I've found that I like development, like software development more, but I would never want to live in a world where I can't do graphic design anymore ever.
So you've grown, in other words, into that kind of vocation.
Yeah. But at the same time, I also want to say that like, there's a way to want to do more than you're doing, want to do something other than what you're doing to help in better ways. Like I think we should and can, unless we're all egalitarians, agree that like Tim Cook does more for the world than the guy who hands out letters at the, you know, big corporate job that, you know, literally anybody could do that job. Like between the Apple Watch, which has had really good health impacts on people. And we don't have to take Apple. Like we could go with other businesses. Like Microsoft has done more for the world than, or what's his name? Why am I forgetting? Bill Gates has done more for the world than your average like mail delivery guy at a corporate job. True. Right. And there's nothing wrong with aspiring to that as long as you're also content with where you are. And I think where a lot of that bitterness comes from is you feel like there's not a way for you to get from A to B. You feel like there's no path. And something that Gary Vaynerchuk, who's he's kind of a entrepreneur helper person who really specializes in social media. Something he keeps pointing out is, you know, you're 30 or however old you are. You're probably going to live to be like 80 or 90 at least. Your life is less than half over. And if you right now want to start a 10-year plan to be doing the thing you want to do in 10 years, it might take 10 years and it might suck. Like it might be a hard process. And maybe you need to make it 15 years because you already have a family and you need to devote more time to them, but you can do that. It's not unachievable. It really is a thing that people do and that you can do. Like if you are, what's that?
I'm almost 40. Am I too late?
No, you're not. I mean, you're later than most, but like if there was a thing where you thought, gee, I really want to do this thing, not be a pastor. We've talked about that one.
That one's out.
But if you decided like you really wanted to completely pivot and you wanted to take up software development or you wanted to take up, I don't know, farming for crying out loud, like a 10-year plan could get you there.
We've talked about some side hustles.
Right. And side hustle is a big part of it.
I'm still kicking them around. Let's just say that.
I mean, we've got this podcast. Who knows?
I like this side hustle. It's a fun one. Anyways.
So there were a number of causes for me. I have causes listed out here. One is I want to be a pastor. We've done that one pretty much to death. We could talk about why people want to be pastors, but that's getting more into theology and like criticizing churches thing than I want to do in this episode. We could talk about only vague encouragement from parents who don't provide guidance. We could talk about Bible college. The last two, Bible college and vague encouragement from parents, that kind of affects me. It's a lot harder to be good at anything is another one that I have here. The notion that you can do anything, even somehow wedge your way into an overcrowded industry, is another one where your parents are, or those around you are just encouraging you in anything. And you decide you want to teach classical Christian education, even though, you know, teach rhetoric at a classical Christian school, even though that's almost impossible to find a job doing. There are fewer legitimate callings. There are more callings, more jobs that would cause you to compromise on Christian ethics. And then not thinking of the world as malleable. These are the reasons that I have listed out. Are there any there that spark your interest for the next, like, 15, 20 minutes of our conversation, Jim?
Only vague encouragement from parents. Do anything. I think this sets up people for, I think vague encouragement from parents sets us up for failure. Also the mushy, you can do anything if you only just believe in yourself. That was a big value in the 90s when I was growing up.
Still is.
It still is. Yeah. And that has done more harm than anything good. because I mean, you kind of have to realize that you really can't do anything that you want to, just if you believe in yourself or if you work hard. Even working hard doesn't get you everything you want. I mean, this is a tough world, Jack. It's a tough world. And I'm calling you Jack now. No, it's a tough world. I think I would have benefited much better. And the key, and here's what I really want to say. I think I would have found much, much more satisfaction in a job that, let's just say, might be called dead end, or a job that's not Bill Gates. I don't have Bill Gates' job. I think I would be much more satisfied with that if my parents, rather than just kind of give me this broad encouragement, tried to work with me and identify some strengths that I had and help me focus on those and be willing to tell me if I wasn't good at something. Mm-hmm. And I don't particularly blame parents that aren't willing to do that. Because that is tough. It's tough to tell your child, because you can potentially break their heart by telling them, no, honey, you're not that good at singing. And we really shouldn't. I'm probably sounding like a monster here. I need to try and find a way to make this work. And always the singing goal. When you crush the singing goal, you are particularly a bad monster. So let me move on from the singing thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody
podcasting, Jim.
Podcasting.
You're not good at this.
You're not good at this. And we're jumping up on episode 93. We just won't get it through our a particular child of mine. Well, I can't say this because they're in the other room and they can hear me. Crap. I can't. I think it's okay. I think it's okay to point out gently if a child is not good at a certain thing, and you can be gentle about it. But rather than focusing on the negative, focusing on pulling them away from something, focus more on pushing them or gently nudging them towards something that you know they are good at, because they will much more likely find joy and derive joy from encouragement for something that they're doing well at. And I think that better hones their pursuits and will help them with the expectations game. So that's a quick little thing I wanted to say about the parenting thing. And I've kind of tried to do that. Might have failed a little bit because some days I kind of want to be the parent that just encourages everything and encourages my child to do whatever they want, because you want them to be happy. You don't want to disappoint them. Mm-hmm. I have resolved early on that I want to try and hone my kids' skills and facilitate a certain kind of direction as opposed to others. Because I don't want to lie to them about the world. The world is a very hard place to be successful in. And I want to give them the best shot rather than just giving them vague platitudes that won't help them when they turn 32. They have huge career decisions to make. And if they're being fueled by the lies that we told them in the 90s, it's just not going to help. It's just not going to help them. Anyways, that's my thing.
We've talked about this a little before, and I've come to the conclusion that and Sarah and I have talked about this a lot too, because again, with my parents, I didn't receive a lot of specific encouragement. It was more of the, you can do anything, but it wasn't like the, you can do anything Disney. It was like, well, you can do whatever you want to do. Like, if that makes sense, it wasn't like that you're special and you can do anything. It was just the, there's a lot of options.
Let's just start, you know, exploring the options and, you know, there's lots of resources available for you if you want. Yeah.
But that guidance was kind of lacking too. And we've talked about this and we've come to the conclusion, like the attitude we want to have is, you know, most people can do most things. Like most people, if they put in the time and put in the effort, can do most of the things. Some people are tone deaf and will never become a vocalist. Like it's just never going to happen for you. Like if you really, really care about it, you're going to need to practice every day for 4 hours. And if after 3 years you haven't gotten anywhere with it, then yeah, you should give up. But like, actually some people who are tone deaf, if they put in 4 hours of practice a day for 3 years, they might actually become good at it. And that's what I mean by like, most people can become good at most things. Same with writing, same, like a lot of people think, oh, I'm not a writer. And it's just like, well, for some people it does come more naturally than others, but like design is the one that I keep going back to, because I was a really bad designer. I have no natural aesthetic sense. I've literally had to develop all of the aesthetic sense that I have. And there's still parts of it that are really difficult for me. So we want to do that. But then what you're saying is also really important, providing some kind of specific guidance. But I think, and you probably agree with this, what we want to do is find, like, so programming for me came relatively naturally, far more naturally than graphic design did. And it's because I love working in very structured systems that are very rigid about the rules of logic and like mathematics. Yeah. And so like, as much as I hated mathematics as a child, or maths, as you would say, I probably could have done something in some kind of mathy field. I also probably could have done something in some kind of like classical music field, because that's a very structured world as well. And so, you know, if my dad, cause that's the thing, is like my dad was a developer and he saw that I could do that. And that was about the only thing he encouraged me toward. And I stupidly didn't listen to him. And he maybe didn't press me. It's really hard to say looking back. And I definitely want to abide by the fifth commandment here. But what I want to say is like, if he had the thought to encourage me toward some sort of classical music or some sort of mathematical, well, math wasn't going to happen. I wanted to do math less than I wanted to do programming, but thinking through like, okay, well, what is it about you that makes this thing good for you? Realizing that, you know, few people like to make bread because they love the feeling of their hand in dough. Like, chances are, if you like to make bread, there's something about that that connects not just with your fingers, but with your brain. And like, maybe you're not quite good at making bread, or maybe this isn't what you want to do, but like, what it, do you like? Do you like the interaction of being in a bakery and literally handing somebody a physical product? Like, that could be, you know, there are other ways to do that that don't involve baking, or, you know, trying to think through like, what is it? What's the principle here that you're good at and that you like? And how can we foster that in any area, and encouraging them to a broad arrangement of things. So it doesn't feel like, cause that's the other thing is, I know when I was a teenager, the last thing I wanted was my parents to tell me what to do. So it doesn't seem like I'm like telling them you need to become a programmer, or you need to join the dark side as I did. So it doesn't feel like that, but it also feels like I'm recognizing things about them that I don't know, in a helpful way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does.
And I'm not a parent. So like, you're the one who's actually in the trenches.
Yeah. I'm trying to not, I need to like keep perspective here, because this does change when you do have your child in front of you with a heart ready to be broken by your words, or about to be broken by your words. This is very hard to do, because, and I only want to be careful with my kids, but yet resolve to tell them the truth, only because I don't believe, and I'm not really talking about my parents. I'm kind of talking about culture here. And my parents were just going along with what culture wanted them to do. And that ethic, that value just destroyed, I think, much of my attitude, or deprived me of a good attitude. Now, this isn't about parents either. I also wanted to kind of mention that, you know, our pasts are our pasts, and there's not really a whole lot we can do to change our past. But you and I are sitting here talking about this, gaining perspective and trying to change. I believe I credit kind of this podcast with helping me change my mind about a couple of things. And vocation is one of them. And you and I have laid our hearts bare about the pastor thing, which I don't ever want to talk about. So we won't be doing that one. I have moved on from that. Even if I do kind of screw up with my kids, I do think that there is a way for them to kind of get on the right track. And not every person who has grew up with the Disney-fied, you can do anything you want to. I don't believe all those people are miserable right now. Some of them actually did get to do what they wanted to do. But it wasn't serendipity. And they probably got it through hard work. They determined to do something, and they did it, and that's great. But before we end the show, I did want to hear your thoughts on not thinking of the world as malleable. I suspect, to the extent that I understand this, I suspect this is something that I have understood relatively late in my life. And I wanted to kind of hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah. So along with the, you can do anything, I think one of the things that you can do anything sometimes fails to get across is that just because a job doesn't exist, doesn't mean you can't do it for a living. Yeah. Thinking of the world as malleable, I think that phrase might've originated or at least gained popularity in one of the biographies of Steve Jobs, who just kind of decided he wanted to change the world to make computers for the everyday person in a way that previously, maybe other companies were trying to do it. And that frequently happens. Like, people have the same idea at the same time because the circumstances lead to that idea less than the person. But in any case, this idea that like, it's just not that hard to make a living when you really think about it, like the amount of money that you as a person need to bring in a month, say, in order to support yourself and a small family, it's not that much money. Especially when you start opening to the idea of, rather than receiving money from one source, receiving money from lots and lots of sources, whether that's because your services or you develop a product. Like, the idea of like, and that's why these businesses, as you know, they start out as startups and they hire like five people. And their expenses go from maybe $70,000 a year to five times that, because they now have seven mouths to feed, essentially, or seven families to feed. And if you're just willing to keep the thing small, and only expand when you're like, gee, what are we going to do with all this money that keeps coming in? Like you can do a lot of different things. Like Etsy shops can work out at that point. Like you have a lot, if you think about, like, you don't have a job and you have a lot of time, you have at least 40 hours a week and you're willing to put in actual work in exchange for money. Mm-hmm. Like there are a lot of things that you can do, and that's how whole industries get created.
This is a big point.
And so for Sarah and I, that's Relight. Like we were thinking about it. And we're like, well, how many Reformed Presbyterians are there in America? And my friend pointed out there's like 200,000. And I was like, gee, if we could get 1% of those to give us $5 a month, we would have to start donating money to the church because that's more than we need. Or we would have to hire somebody. And I really don't want to hire somebody, but that's a whole nother thing.
sure.
Because,
dang it, I can't get a job.
as soon, I would love to contract people, but as soon as you have that commitment to pay somebody for basically ever, you know, for their whole life to do certain kinds of things, like you have to keep coming up with work for them to do. And when the product is done and you feel like it's good and it just needs to slip into maintenance, you don't want to have to lay all those people off. Anyway, none of that matters. What I'm trying to say is, like, you don't have to think of the traditional model of there are jobs that exist and I need to write a resume and apply to one of those jobs and get hired so that a person with a mustache probably will hand me a paycheck or direct deposit every 2 weeks or a month so that I can feed my family. Like there are other ways of doing that. And we think of that as the most secure way too, but it really isn't. Like if you can find a job working for 15 different people, whether that's creating products or services, like that's way more stable because if one of those one or two of those fall through, you still have the other 13.
The Disney ethic all of a sudden is a little bit more in play now.
Right.
because of Etsy, you know.
And the internet. But even if you decided to do something local and you're in a reasonably sized town, you know, if you're just like, hey, I feel like people around here would really like meat, I'm going to open up a real butcher shop.
Yeah. We always feel our hearts warmed when we read the story of the guy or the gal in a job somewhere in their 30s. And they're miserable, but they have this idea, this burning desire to do something, and they cannot get rid of it. They cannot shake it. They cannot forget it. And they finally say to their boss, you know what? I'm giving my 2 weeks today, and I'm going to go and do this thing that I've wanted to do for so long, but now they have the opportunity to. Mm-hmm. And then they're successful. They're not wildly successful, but they're happy. Mm-hmm. They're happy. They have enough money to do what they need to do to live reasonably. And we cheer that. And I think in years past, when we cheered that, we also had a little bit of sadness because we think, oh, I could never do that. I don't think that was true at the time. Mm-hmm. But certainly now, with all of the DIY stuff, the DIY culture that has emerged, and the gig economy, and all of these resources available to enable you to do something on your own, versus before you'd have to call somebody or hire someone on to do it or go to that person for Mr. Mustache and work for him in order to get that paycheck. I think there's a lot less excuses or there's a lot less opportunity for excuse now to kind of do what you want. So in some ways it's a hopeful time right now for this problem, for the person in their 30s. I keep saying it this way because I'm kind of half being funny, but other half of me thinks that I think a lot of people in their 30s are feeling but you know, it's not that they're without excuse, but there is certainly opportunity available for you to do something. It's scary. Yes. It's hard to do. Yes. We'll take some investment. Yes. But, there may be still time for someone who's struggling with their vocation, their calling, to do something. And if you're not good at something, there's opportunity to become good at something, especially now. So I'm glad you brought, I'm glad I brought this up, but it kind of confirmed a suspicion that I had. At least this topic doesn't have to be depressing for people.
Yeah. And even for the guy in your 30s, because I mean, I'm thinking the guy who's 18 and still living with his parents, if he wants to take 2 years and try a thing, like there's no loss. Like you go, so what, you go to college or trade school at 20 instead of 18. Like everybody does that. But I'm thinking, you know, even for the guy in his 30s, like there's two routes here. Like one is you just work really, really hard in the evenings and weekends. Specifically Saturdays, because Sundays are the Lord's Day. So that's one option. And then the other is you save like really hard for 3 or 4 years until you have 2 years salary saved up. And it's not that risky when you think about it, because if you decide I'm going to take 2 years and work on this thing, even if it doesn't work out, you can just get another job. Most companies don't care that there's a 2 year gap in your resume.
Yeah. It's a lot easier to get away with now than it used to be.
Exactly. Well, I mean, Yeah. So there's a few different ways, but it is typically harder work. If you're going to establish an industry, establish a business, like there's going to come a time where like, if you were wanting a job because you love your family and you really like spending time with them and you really don't care what you do during the day, like this is not for you. Like it's probably not going to work out. I mean, maybe you could go from one Mr. Mustache paycheck job to another through like online school and taking a little bit of time here and there. But basically like it does take work. It doesn't just take time. And again, where you are in life may have fairly profound impact, but again, it's still possible. Like you can go from the 35-year-old to the 50-year-old who at 50 is actually doing what he wants to do, regardless of what that thing is. Again, unless it's like impossible. You know, I want to be Bill Gates. Like, okay, well, settle down, fella.
Yeah, you're too big for your britches. Well, I'm encouraged. I think we need to end the show here.
All right. Do you want to talk about Bible college next week?
What are we going to talk about?
Bible college. What that does to people's dreams.
Do you want to talk about Bible college next week?
It's in the show notes, Jim.
What do you want to talk about?
In regards to this.
Bible college.
I thought you didn't hear me. It's in the show notes.
Let's talk about Bible.
All right. This will be part two of directionlessness.
All right. Good. This will be we did persuasion. Now we can do directionlessness.
Yes.
And have a lot to say about it. All right. Well, we'll do Bible college next week. And you and I will talk about our miserable failures. Can't wait. All right. Well, until then, say lovey and I'll see everybody.
Lovey. And we'll see everybody later.
All right.
Won't someone save me from this podcast? Star.